Blog Talk Radio.
December 19th, 2012. And you know what I'm tired of at this end of the year? I'll ever as well tell you what bugs me. I'm tired of knowing everybody's birthday. Every time I go into Facebook, right at the top of the page, they tell me whose birthday it is. And you know what? I used to see people posting comments saying this is the greatest thing to ever happen to birthdays, because when they check into Facebook at the end of the day, you know, they see 100 greetings and they feel like they're somebody. And I myself used to think it was a great thing too. I would try to think up interesting birthday wishes for people or find them a funny video, post it on their pages. But you know what? After a while, it became a burden, a burden, a burden. Okay, and now it's a burden I just ignore. So, like, I don't care about your birthday. I don't have time to play games with you. That's the big lesson I learned. Just like I don't have to read the news from Bangladesh because it's not important to me. And you know what? Just to swing it around, make it a little relevant, there's a lesson here for job hunters. You guys are always complaining that you apply to an ad from a corporation and nobody ever gets back to you. Well, don't you ever think about the poor recruiter in that organization? The guy's got 40 jobs to fill. He's got no time to be nice to you. Hey, he might have been nice when he started working there and he tried to make everybody feel wanted, but you know what? Being nice is exhausting. That's what Facebook taught me. And anybody in a real job knows it's true. That's why kids are always making fun of adults. Oh, you're a robot. You're not nice. I don't want to be part of your world. You know, that's what they love to say to their parents and point the finger. I'm going to be a hippie or an artist when I grow up. And of course, they end up being just like you. And you know why? Because life sucks. No fun living in a world with no free lunch. But people keep having kids so they can suffer too, just like we do on Jerry Jerry. What show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show!
Cleared from that artificial pork product you were eating during the green room period?
Yeah, it's not artificial pork. It's processed pork.
Well, it's processed. Okay. That sounds awful.
I mean, there's something real in here, I think. It tastes like it. Something.
Okay. Okay, good, good.
I'm going to go back to nibbling.
I didn't think, you know, a hunting man like you indulged in that kind of stuff, but I want to go on. Hey, it's a miracle that you're here anyway. I want to go on to my guest. My guest today is Sean O'Neill. He wrote a book called Bare Knuckle Management. Sean O'Neill, are you here?
I am in the house. How are you, animal? How are you,
okay,
Jerry?
Okay, are you talking into your phone? Are you talking?
I'm talking
into
right
phone?
Into my phone, yes.
Can everybody hear him, Jerry?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Wake up, Jerry. I know Jerry hasn't been here for like 3 weeks. Wake up, okay?
I'm up.
So this guy, Sean, wrote a book called Bare Knuckle Management. He wrote it with his childhood friend, John Kulisek, who's not here. Okay, and they were on the Imus show. But, you know, Imus didn't show up for them. Imus didn't show up for them. But now you're on the Animal Show, Sean. And I know
it's a
step down. But on my show, you get to speak to me. I don't dump you with Jerry and some girl like Rayanne, okay?
Listen, I don't like B teams. I like to be here with you. That's absolutely
okay,
the way
good.
I like
now,
it. Yep.
I heard you quit school in grade 9. Is that true?
No. That's not true at all. That's John Kulisek. He quit school in 8th grade.
He did. And you were in a coffee shop one day, and a guy came up and said, "Sean, I'm your dad."
Where are you going with this? That's what I want to know.
I just was doing some research on the internet. Maybe there's more than one Sean O'Neill.
There might be one
or
two.
Sometimes I get them wrong. You know, there's a disambiguation issue. Okay, so that's not you. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to a question. Okay, now I'll ask you a question right off the IMA show. I saw you
love
there.
It.
You
I've
said
seen it
there's
14
a lot
times.
Of books. There's a lot of books for CEOs out there, but not for middle managers. And that's why you wrote the book. So I asked myself, what's the difference? Why does a middle manager need a different book than a senior manager? And I have an answer. It's because he's got more losers on his team. Is that correct?
No, that's not the reason why. The reason why is because a CEO needs a book to move a sea of people. So I sort of see them as like government officials. Like, they are going to make laws that most of the people are going to follow most of the way, most of the time. A manager, you have 10, 15, 20 people. I need a more refined tool than that. I'm just making laws. I want to make sure that, you know, if most of the people are following the directions most of the time, well, that's okay. But that means I have 12 people not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I need to be, you know, really zeroing in, tailoring my policies to meet each and every person. So, no,
okay.
I think it's very different.
Okay, I don't know if that's true, but I'll let you get away with it. You know, I've been reading your blog.
Well, why don't you ask me for examples? You should ask me for some examples.
Okay, give me an example. What's a CEO book?
You want a CEO book? Who Moved My Cheese?
What's
one
that?
The worst books of all time.
Who's written that? Who wrote
for,
that?
I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know.
Okay, look.
I thought you were, okay, sorry. You ask a question.
No.
Go
if
ahead.
You got something to say, say it. Don't let me cut you off, okay? God forbid. Everybody tells me that's my biggest fault. I cut boring people off. Go ahead.
No, that's all I have to say.
Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you what I like about you reading your blog. You don't try to hide your faults, okay? Just like the Bible. King David, everybody knows he murdered a guy. You know, he stole his wife and sent him to the Russian front to get killed. But he's still a hero, and he's still in the book. And that's how you treat yourself in your own blog. It's like your own little Bible full of stories
right.
about your family and stuff. But, you know, there's a downside to that because it's hard to bluff. The Bible wasn't written until after King David was dead. How can you sell yourself when you open the kimono to such a great extent? You want me to give you examples?
No, I don't. I mean, one of the things that in my space, and actually I'm sure it's in the recruiting space as well. I've dealt with plenty of recruiters in my day where when somebody's holding themselves out as the ultimate guru and they're, you know, Teflon and they're completely bulletproof, it comes off as incredible. Or what they're really commanding is that people sort of sit and bow at their feet, which is complete crap to me. So I actually do lead with my faults. For me, it kind of humanizes me. I don't like to be the person on a podium that's up on a, you know, some sort of, you know, bulletproof vest wearing person who could just say whatever he wants to say and spout off and not get challenged.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons why I wanted to come on the show was so you could challenge me. Bring it.
Yeah, okay. Fine, because here's what made me doubt your skills as a manager. After I read your blog, you can't even train your wife, okay? She wants your kids. She wants your kids to do good on their Spanish test, so she says, go up to your room and study. They need to be micromanaged. She couldn't figure that out. She thought if she sent them up there, and they're like, they're 14, she knows them already, you go up to the room, and then she's surprised they didn't do anything. They just fooled around, and they did lousy on their test. That's not management. Hey, what's up with that?
I actually think it is management, because the stakes of an 8th grade Spanish test are relatively low. I'd love it if they get smoked on that test. And for me, it kind of kicked them in the pants and got them going for when they entered high school and they actually needed to study and deliver.
No, it didn't. It just didn't teach them good habits. Come on. You're just rationalizing a disaster and making it look good, okay?
Well, that could very well be the case. But, you know, listen, I think my wife tends to favor micromanagement, and it actually drives me a little nuts.
I didn't gather that. In fact, here's your conclusion from your article. You concluded that people are just unmanageable. It's not easy, quote, getting someone to do something they don't really want to do. What do you need a manager
impossible.
For then anyway, eh? You just shrug.
No, it's impossible. If I don't have leverage, then what in the world – how am I going to move anybody to do it? I lead with that fully and forthrightly every single time I talk to
you. Yeah, you don't have any leverage over your kids. Oh, please. Jerry, you got anything to say about that, or is it just all boring for you. You can say
I'm looking for some show traction here, quick.
Wow.
Okay.
And I'm not.
Do you want to ask a question? Do you have something to ask them? Because I've got questions about how should we identify a good manager. But I just found these blog postings interesting, and I want to ask him about them. What would you like to know? He's a management guru. Come on. We've never had
No, not a guru. Expressly not a guru. I avoid that term at all
Expert.
Costs.
Expert. Okay. Trainer. You know, you're selling your services, okay? You're teaching people management. We've never had one like you on the show.
Never.
Is there anybody who wants to ask him a question? Jerry, go. Anybody else?
I'm still listening.
Okay, anybody else?
But I'm actively listening, meaning
okay, Jerry,
I'm
been
looking
a manager.
For
Yeah, you
Come
been
on,
a manager.
Animal,
okay.
Get into it.
Okay, who's that? Oh, Fleur. Okay, my Fleur. I will. Go ahead. He just got so many examples, I got to take a few more. The guy has a bad day at work. This is our guest, and he's coaching his son's basketball team. So he goes to the game, and he goads the kid. He gives him a hard time. So the kid does something just to spite him, the coach. Coach isn't nice to him. He's not nice back. And so what does our guest do? He penalizes his son. He says, you can't play during the first quarter of the next game. Didn't go over very well. He said, and here's what he said, I'm suffering too. That I know I did wrong, but my punishment is punishing you. That's baloney. And his wife refused to talk to him. And the kid refused to talk to him. There's good management for you. So during the game, just before the game, he begs the kid, please take your punishment like a man for the sake of the team. And the kid bails him out, right? And that's not the end of the story. But let me ask you, am I telling it right?
Yeah, you're telling it completely right. And actually,
yeah.
where you're missing it is that I was punished. I mean, he was the best player on my team. So,
yeah, okay.
But truthfully, one of the things that we do as managers or even recruiters.
If you would have had to give $1,000 to charity for screwing up like that, that would have been punishment. Punishing your kid is not punishment for you. Anyway, go ahead. That's hypocrisy. That's what it is. Go ahead. Sorry.
Wow, you're hitting hard. Well, the truth of the matter is that I actually don't think that people take ownership of their mistakes enough. So, I mean, I acted like an idiot. I acted like an immature little idiot, and I fessed up to that. It's not easy for parents or managers to tell
like
their kids
idiot,
or their
so
employees.
I punished my kid and then begged them to bail me out.
Well, you and I have a
difference. And poor little kid did it for me. Thanks, son. Okay. What if he
That's called, I, that was all the managing leading up to that actually gave me some traction with him. It was all the pre-management that helped him bail me out. It would led
yeah.
to it. Was
yeah, sure. You're taking credit for his action. Very nice. What would you have done if he would have just, remained spiteful? He's your leading player. He's the guy you trust on the floor. What if he would have said, screw you?
Yeah, I think, then I need to take matters in my own hands. I need to, then his punishment gets extended, and therefore mine does too.
Okay,
this is the way it is.
You've got an article about crisis management, right?
Yes.
That would have been a crisis, right?
Well, relatively speaking, yes. I mean, crises
okay.
are...
Okay, and was he your superstar, your franchise, what you like to call, you have goofy names for your types of employees. Was he your franchise, your superstar?
He was my franchise, indeed.
And would you have got rid of him if he would have been rebellious?
No, I would not have gotten rid of him. I mean, I guess at some point I would have. I mean, listen, even in the book I say, at some point there's a cost to keeping a franchise player that outweighs the benefits that he delivers or she delivers. So, yeah, at some point, if it's going to tarnish the team or make the team believe that I'm not credible as a coach, then you bet.
You'll fire.
So
listen, recruiting managers, here's a guy who will fire his best player. And he says elsewhere in the book or on his blog, he says many coaches, managers, have built their careers around having a good player on their team. This guy says he would axe him. We'll get back to that. I gave you a mission. You've got an ad. You want to go ahead and deliver it now, please?
Love to. This is a letter from Brenda Lepic. Dear Animal, I'm a loyal listener looking for a new contract as a staffing consultant. I do sourcing and recruiting, and although my special focus used to be the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry, in the last 2 years I've become more of a generalist. So I am seeking 1099 or W-2 work. I have a strong history of working from my home office, and my references are real! Check her out on LinkedIn, people. Her name is Brenda Lepic. She's in Florida, and her email. Should I give her email,
yes,
Animal?
Yes, please do, yeah.
It's B as in Brenda, L as in Lepic, BL934@MSN.com. Hit her up.
That was
How's
fantastic.
That?
Hey, that was great. You're going to get a prize for that for the year. I got to tell you. Anybody else prepared? Tell me. Kathy Manis, are you on the line? You're getting sleepy. Come on. I find this an interesting conversation.
I'm here. Okay. I really think you did a great ad for Brenda. That was the best I've ever heard.
Okay, but the show itself stinks. Is that what you're saying?
What?
The show stinks. I thought you got on Twitter. I'm getting sleepy.
I know, I am.
But why? What can we do to change it?
Well, it's just not anything that I'm finding that intriguing. I'm sorry.
We need some controversial animal. Something
okay.
fairly
maybe,
aggressive.
Maybe if he, I don't know. Okay.
Thought-provoking.
You know what? He likes to talk about sports, and I don't know anything about it, so I don't know. But here, he's got a controversial idea. The guy's a trainer, and he says leadership training sucks. He says the communication models they give you, they don't work for anybody. And then they tell you to catch your employees doing stuff right and reward them. But, you know, what do you do when you got a bunch of knuckleheads who aren't doing anything right? That's a good question. Let me tell you a story, Sean. They had a zoo, they had a gorilla, and they wanted to clean his cage, and they, you know, would entice him to come out with fruit. They would reinforce his behavior, but he just sat there in the doorway. They couldn't do anything with him. He didn't respond to the fruit. What do you do?
To the gorilla? I think I'd probably prod him with...
You said you can't reward good behavior if they don't have any behavior. This guy didn't have anything they wanted to reward. Give me an example from real management life, not the zoo, okay?
So then
you tell me right now if that's going to be interesting, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead, Sean. You got a judge there, okay?
Good.
She's got
I love judges.
Too. She's got
I love
kids
being
too.
A judge.
She's
All right, good.
Got kids
Perfect.
Too. Go ahead.
All right, so what you got to do, I mean, at some point I do believe all people are lab rats to some extent. So if they're not going to be enticed by the carrot, you got to hit them with the stick. So you're going to prod them or you're going to give them a little electric jolt and move them toward the gate. That's what you got to do.
Give me an example.
You weren't muted. Whoever said that, you weren't muted.
Hey, is that Ryan?
Yes.
What'd they
nice
say?
To see you. Nice to see
Somebody
you.
Said, I'm muted. And I said, no, you weren't. I heard you.
I didn't hear them. You're getting it from somewhere else.
Must
okay?
be in your office or something.
Yeah, I know. I'm in my office alone. Thank you, gentlemen, though. I appreciate you telling me where I'm hearing it.
You know, you're toned down. I noticed it last week. Something's wrong with you, Ryan. You're polite. You're quiet. You're not your old you. What happened?
What the hell is the matter with you? Yes, I am.
No. I know what happened. You're a VP now, and you're worried about your image.
I'm surprised you didn't react to animals labeling you as just some girl earlier in the show.
I just hopped on the show 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, you missed it.
I was busy working. What did he say?
Ryan or some girl. I didn't say... Okay. So you want to give
wow.
you know, Sean? Let's come back to the guest, okay? Now I'm glad I asked Sean. You see, maybe you can coach me. I'm in a pickle here. I've got you as a guest. I think you think you're interesting. I think you're interesting. Nobody else does.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, I know. I would shock the crap out of me. That's what I would do. I don't know what to say. I mean, I lead with what I lead with.
Team. This is my team. What should I do with them?
Your team is. Gorillas in a cage? Trying to piece
you
this
want to
together.
Call yourself that chair? Come on. Anyway, okay. So leadership training sucks. Is that what you believe?
It is what I believe. I mean, it is in part what I'm hired to do. But to be honest with you, it's not contextual at all. So people sit in these training classrooms, and they do these kind of canned exercises, and learn these kind of academic models, which are useful in certain circumstances, but the problem is they're not useful in the really challenging ones and the hard ones. I mean, people are so different. And so one of the things I focus on is getting people to really take a look at the person in front
okay,
of them.
Okay, yeah,
understand
I'm finding this boring
concept.
Myself, okay?
Wow.
I'm finding it boring myself. Okay, I'm going to switch it to recruiting. I'm trying to manage, entice you, and inspire my crew here, okay? I want them
I hear
to think
you.
It's a good show. Now, you say quite clearly that no one style of management is best, and you look at two football coaches to prove it, a guy named Tony Dungy, who's introspective.
Tony Dungy! Go Colts!
Emotionally reserved, and he's really, you mentioned that he's religious, and on his Twitter page, he says he lives by Mark 336 or something like that. Okay, and then you got this other guy, John Gruden, who's impulsive and he flies by the seat of his pants. They're completely different, but they're both successful. So you can't judge a manager by his or her style. Any style might work. The way to tell if you've got a good manager, if his or her team will go through walls for her. If they'll walk through walls for her, that means that's a good manager. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a good benchmark. I mean, it's hard to tell if you're recruiting for someone in that position, but what you can probably gauge is their style a good fit? What's the culture of the organization? You know, is this person going to fit here? You know, a highly religious person in a place where everybody's dropping F-bombs all over the place probably isn't a great fit for that organization.
Me that this guy made everybody stop swearing on the football team just because he didn't swear. Come on.
No, but he toes his religious beliefs. He toes them very, very firmly.
Yeah,
very,
so that means
know,
the culture's not an issue. That's his private issue. He's not going to push his religion on his team, right?
Well, of course they could push his religion on his team, but what he's doing is steering his style, and his style is led by those religious passages.
Okay, come on. Let's come up with some questions. How can there's recruiters here. If they're hiring a manager, what are some good questions to ask a manager? Jerry or Rayanne, do you have any? This guy needs some priming. Kathy, any questions for a manager? How do you assess a good manager when you're interviewing?
Me?
Tell me about your biggest failure.
Blame.
No.
Do you actually ask that?
Yeah, they do ask it. They do still ask that.
They still ask it.
Okay, well, you know, Sean, do you have any questions?
Nobody else is chiming in, and your guest is boring. Get out of it.
Tell us about a difficult situation that you were able to manage. Turn it around. Tell us about a situation you were able to turn around, that kind of thing.
Right,
yeah, nobody
right.
knows how to assess a manager. Sean, could you help us?
Yeah, first off, you know, I got to understand what it is that the position needs and requires, and each manager position is going to be very different. So I want to bring into that interview all this different context, and I want to speak right to that context. So to ask a general kind of out of the book kind of question to me is going to fall flat almost. Well, people kind of prep for interviews.
I'm with you, man.
Give me an example. So you're saying you can't just there's no such thing as a good manager, a generic type. Every manager has various assets that are suitable to certain situations but not others. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm not only saying that, but some people can be really horrendous managers in certain situations and all of a sudden emerge as a great manager in a different context. Another sports reference, but Joe Torre was a really mediocre manager in baseball for years, mediocre at best, great player, mediocre manager. He gets hired by the New York Yankees to manage a team of superstars and crybabies and all sorts of whiners. And he just has the right tenor, this sort of even-keeled tenor, not a great X's and O's guy, not a great baseball guy, but just knows how to pull the right strings on the right person to get a big result. And so, like, there's a perfect example where if I were just asking what were your greatest failures or successes, or I was looking at his track record, yikes, I might have the wrong result. But somehow, in that discussion, what emerged was this guy's going to be the right tenor, the right attitude, the right presence for our team of $200 million athletes or whatever it is.
Okay, here's a tough question for you. Can you give us an example that isn't from baseball or football but from real business?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead. Somebody else had a question.
No, it's your time to answer. Don't try to shove it off on somebody else.
I'll give you a great example. I run a company that's a sales company across the country, and we have a bank partnership. And banks I always think of as financially driven, goal-driven, success-driven. And they were hiring – that we have a representative who services that bank. And I was meeting with the VP of cash management at this bank to understand, really check in. This rep is sort of a bit of a slacker in bare-knuckle people management parlance, a bit of a slacker. And I was worried about her performance.
You know, slacker is a word that we use in normal language as well, okay? We understand
it
what it means. Thanks.
All right, perfect, as long as you're clear, as long as we're clear. So I asked this bank manager, I was checking in on Laura, we'll call her, and the banker said, well, actually, I was afraid you were going to come in here and tell me that Laura would no longer be available. We love Laura. And I almost fell out of my chair, and I asked, why? Why do you love Laura? She said, well, she seems to fit with our company. We don't at our bank. We don't really adhere to goals here. We don't have many goals here. And I said, and I kind of closed the door, turned around and closed the door, and I said, can you tell me your president has heard you say that? You don't have goals? in this organization? She said, we don't like to really follow goals. We don't really like goals very much. So Lisa, Laura, is a perfect fit. She's a perfect fit for this bank. And she probably wouldn't be a perfect fit for any other bank that I've ever had a deal
with. Yeah, I got a bit of a problem with that example. Although I liked it, I'm looking for a manager, not a rep, okay? Can you get it through your head? Give me an example of a manager, okay?
A manager jumps into the role. I'll give you a good example of a manager who steps into a role. She came from outside the industry, came into a payroll processing.
Did we say step into the role? No, I'm looking for a case of a manager who was hired for a specific situation.
Yes,
she
was hired.
Either wasn't right for it or was. Go ahead.
Hired for a certain situation to pick up a team that was falling off. What she ended up doing was, she didn't know anything about the industry, and it was a company that where they were used to promoting from within. So she was from outside, not from within. And she was nervous about this role. She didn't know anything about the industry. And what she did was she found out and kind of identified and publicly named all these subject matter experts on her team, person who could help her with understanding insurance, person who could help her understanding X, Y, and Z, whatever these different payroll products were. And they became mentors to her on each of these subject matters. So what she did in taking this role and doing this, she single-handedly empowered her people to kind of step up. I gave him this tag of expert, which made most of them at least feel pretty good about their role and made them take it very seriously. And then she also had the benefit of learning all of these different areas of this business in a relatively short period of time. And really, that ramp-up time
now,
was
when they hired
not
her,
so painful.
Like, how do you know that you're going to hire somebody? I mean, not everybody's. You say, oh, you're an expert. I'm going to pin a little ribbon on you. They're not going to respond to that if they're a real slack. I mean, we're going to get into it. You've got 16 different types of people. Most of them are no good, okay, on your team.
Yep.
So most of them are not. They're not going to be moved. These, you know, has-beens and lazy people. How would you know that you've got this? Well, let me switch gears. You've got 16. Your thing is that there's 16 different types of people. First of all, is that from the Myers-Briggs with different names?
It's close enough. It's actually from the DISC assessment, but it's very similar. And really, it was kind of generated out of four different types. So like a hard driver guy, a person who loves to be loved, a person who's sort of steady and consistent, and a person who's a noodler like yourself, who's like, you know, ferociously into detail.
I'm a noodler. You know, the guy, I ask him for his details, he pins a name on me. Thanks, okay? You know what a noodler, I would call, is a nerd. Lost in data. Bad presenter. Thanks. I'm a host of a show, and he's telling me I'm a bad presenter. Okay, now, but look, most of these guys, look at just the names you give them. ADHD Butterfly, Needy Ned, Mr. Inappropriate, Slacker, Burnout, Retread, and Asshole, okay? Those
guys,
half the team is definitely no good. How did those guys get hired? Since you're saying that these are standard employees, how did those guys get hired?
I'm talking to recruiters here, so I know you're familiar with the 80-20 rule. I mean, 80% of these people, or 80% of the productivity, is coming from 20% of the population. That's almost that Pareto efficiency is true everywhere, certainly on work teams. So
Is that a fact? I mean, who says this stuff?
But you look around at any work team that you've ever worked with. Where is the productivity coming from, especially where you can
not 80% coming from 20%.
Wrong. 80% coming from 20%, and I've been on a lot of sales teams where 90% is coming from 10%.
Man,
I mean,
you don't agree with
him,
Jerry.
You think
Sean's wrong, right?
Not necessarily him. He's just repeating what everybody says. I wonder who started that.
That's the Pareto principle. Pareto was a fascist and an elitist, but everybody believes what he says anyway, right?
But
I reject that.
Okay, but this is played out every day. I mean, listen, one of the things my co-author John Kulisek said when we were writing this book, because we had so much time during the Great Recession here in the States, and I said, you know, he said to me, you watch, when all this is said and done, it's going to be hard for some of these people to get their jobs back because people are going to realize that once they're gone, we don't really need them. Now, there's some tension points being played out now as productivity starts to increase, but rest assured, I think he was right. In a lot of cases, you go to any sizable organization, and there are a lot of people. If you track them, you find a lot of people not doing a whole lot of work. It is amazing to me.
You know what? When you were on the IMUS show, you didn't mention that in your book you call him a retread, right?
Right. Well, that was a plug to try to get on the I'm a Show, and then
I got on
the show, and then he wasn't there. Right. It kind of backfired.
No, you know what? I thought those hosts were really good with you. This guy and his buddy, his childhood friend who we wrote the book with, they were very good. It only lasted 5 minutes, but I thought the hosts were very good with them as well. I'll pay him a compliment. You're not going over as well with my crowd.
No, you have a tougher crowd, but that's good.
Okay.
I like the challenge, even if I'm not stepping up to it.
But
I said I might suck. I'll prepare. I might suck.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned Imus was you call him a retread. A retread is a job hopper who overpromises, underdelivers, but always manages to get another job.
Right.
Hey, I appreciate you. I appreciate trying to pick us up and inspire us. Who's doing that? Stop it,
music.
Okay?
What?
This
Jerry?
Is Kenny G. It's not me.
No, turn it off.
Turn it off, will ya? I'm going to have to start cutting people. You don't want to.
Wow.
Want to do
it's
that.
Not Rayanne. Don't cut Rayanne.
It's not Kathy. It's elevator music, whatever it is.
Hold on.
God, it's horrible.
Let's hear it.
Spyro Gyra? No.
Maybe now the show is looking better. Maybe I'm
okay,
looking better.
Okay, well, now I have to go through all the people and cut somebody, okay? Hold on. It's going to take me a minute.
And then tell us who did it.
Anybody else want to say hi besides this is your chance? Oh, Jerry, I knew it wasn't you.
It's not Rayanne. No 949.
Not
Sean either. In spite of all the insults, not Sean.
Not 858.
Nobody. It's somebody's phone. Somebody's phone system.
Wow.
Not mine. I'm on a landline. Oh,
818.
There we go.
Is that the host?
818.
No, 818. Is that the guest? Is the guest still with me?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. It was 818. Well, 818 was the first one to call in. I thought it might have been you, okay?
818 is a California number.
It is. Valley.
It's not
San Fernando
Rayanne,
Valley.
Alan, it's Kathy.
It was Kathy.
Look, I've been trying to get to this point for 10 minutes. The retread gets a lot of jobs. How?
Because they are professional interviewers. They interview great. Interviewees. They're professional interviewees. They say what the other person wants them to say, what they think they want them to hear, and they deliver on that.
Okay, you got the badass. The badass is a bull in a china shop. Now that guy
Wait,
can deliver.
Can I just go back to the? Can I just go back to this retread for a second?
I mean,
I think that is relevant to this audience. I mean, this is why the canned questions don't work. Because that guy is professional at answering those questions. They've answered them time and time again. They answer them every 9 months when they get fired or think they're going to get fired.
Yeah, Imus can't be a retread. Everybody knows exactly what he's done. His reputation is public. That doesn't make any sense what you just said, okay?
Yeah, okay.
He's saying Imus is a retread?
Yeah, he says
Imus
in his book, Imus is a retread.
Well, because Imus has resurfaced 14 different times because he blows up and gets his ass thrown out off of the radio.
So
and
is Howard Stern. Retread.
He's an idiot.
Yeah,
okay,
retread.
Look, we're going off track. Can I just want to get this? So you've got your two tough guys, the badass who delivers. He's rude and a bull in a china shop, but delivers. And then you've got the asshole as well. And how do they get hired? Okay.
I think the badass can trot out numbers. The asshole can't. So the badass, you know, certainly in a sales context, can just trot out sales performance. He'll hit president's clubs or do whatever, and so you're going to feel pretty good about your hire there. But he's not going to warm and charm you, that's for sure. So, you know, they often struggle through that interview process, especially if it's sort of like they're waiting to give you the warm and fuzzy reaction. You know, the smile test. I mean, they're not going to pass that at all. You know, the assholes are just difficult people, and with nothing really to hang their hat on. They're kind of bitter. I mean, I think where you see the asshole more is the person who's been in the job for 30 years. I think, Jerry, you asked this. How do they stay there? How are they still there? You know, we have a person in this office here who's been here for a very long time, and he is about the most, you know, ogreish curmudgeon that can be. I can't even really pinpoint what the hell he even does on a day-to-day basis.
Is that your dad?
And yet he's here.
He's probably from New Jersey.
Well, I'm from New York, so yes, he definitely is from New Jersey.
Oh, okay, yeah, see. We don't have that crowd here in the Midwest.
Okay, yeah, you know, we have a good
crowd.
Oh, no, also,
that's
gonna,
my favorite. That's my favorite. That is
yes,
complete
Yes, your dad is
crowd.
Working for and you don't like him. Okay, now look, I think that there's an issue here. I think headhunters like us, primarily, we probably don't bring in people like this. Okay, these guys are hired by corporate recruiters who are, way, like I said, way too busy. They get deluged with resumes, and I don't know if they interview the people, but I don't know how these guys, you know, nonstop talk, and the butterfly, nonstop talker, doesn't do any work, needy Ned, oversensitive, needs attention and approval, Mr. Inappropriate, old school, vulgar, bigoted, sexist. Right? Mm. How do these get hired, right? And then you know who you like in your good guys? You put the snitch. There's somebody who likes to go by, well, you know, who's
no, I don't, he's
rules.
Not a good guy. The Whistler is not a good guy. No.
He's not on your trading block, and he's not under the bench warmers. He's under utility players.
Well, because he can be of use to you. If I'm a manager and I have a guy who blows the whistle on the dirty crap that's going on behind my back, I can actually find some usefulness there. But
isn't that guy more caught up though in gossip?
Yeah,
and he also to get information to blow the whistle on, doesn't he have to be in there passing gossip around, starting small fiefdoms and wars in the organization?
He's not out of there.
Listen, okay, all right,
yeah, we'll get him out of there. But listen, he can do damage, that's for sure. But he can be of use to you. I hear you. Jerry, that's a fair point. Well, but Animal, I think you were getting at a point that I thought was really interesting, because the headhunter isn't dealing with most of these characters. The headhunter is dealing with a much more, typically, really one of your people in the starting five, right? They're much more polished. They're people who are sought after. They've got a resume that has impressed you. Their LinkedIn profile or their CV or whatever that you've seen has impressed you. So this is, I mean, you're not bottom dwelling. You're actually dealing with really capable people on a regular basis. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, there's a girl here who's got a question for you, and Alicia Jones. She says, I lost it. I noticed it quite a while ago. I used to have someone who watched Twitter for me, but I can't enroll anybody to do that. I'm not a good manager, I guess.
Well, what did you do to Maureen to make her leave?
Maybe it wasn't me, okay.
The show sucks.
Yeah, her favorite
the guest,
question.
The guest is
her favorite question for a manager is, what personality type do you have difficulty working with? That's not a bad question, is it?
No, I love that question because it's going to tell me a lot. I mean, one of the things that I put in my notes to you when you were asking me to prepare and you just kind of rejected that at hand was, I like to see what makes a candidate vulnerable. Like where do they feel a little sticky? What makes them fidget in their seat a little bit? And it's not so much the, you know, what's your, you know, what tell me the time you didn't succeed at something, because they have a stock answer for that. But like something about, you know, hey, tell me about somebody who you didn't really work very well with. What was it about them and you that didn't allow for that to be a useful dynamic? I mean, to me, that is an interesting question, and I'm going to watch how they respond to that, because invariably they're going to have other people that they're not dealing very effectively with.
That's not a hard question to answer, really, because you just have to pick out one of your losers. I don't like assholes. I don't like burnouts. I don't like retreads. I don't like slackers.
There's lots of
people. I don't get along with them, and I'm going to get them off my team.
No. Fair enough. But what I would – the follow-up question to that question is, and what were you contributing to that dynamic? What could you have done differently to make that dynamic better? I mean, that makes people uncomfortable. When they have to put themselves out there, that's when you actually see them open up and see them a little bit more raw. I mean, if I'm interviewing people, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for what's beneath the Teflon, what's beneath the shell that they're putting forth. Because the shell that they're putting forth isn't going to tell me much, either good or bad.
Somebody sent me, Alan Fleur sent me, I hope he doesn't mind my saying, a DM. That's not the best way to communicate with me when you're on the line. Just speak up, okay?
What did the DM say?
Can we hear more than the typical management speaker hype? Oh, he didn't want me to criticize you.
Redacted.
Sorry, Al.
Take it back.
Okay. So,
leave that one on the cutting room floor, will you, Animal?
Okay, you know what? We got, you know, hold on a second, Sean. You know, it's not always the case. I mean, these guys, some interviews I do, I think they're great. I goes into the after show where they judge us, and they don't like them. So I'm just going to give them a chance again. What's wrong with this show? I think it's not bad, okay?
I have a question that I have a little bit of interest.
Go ahead.
Wow, nice.
Sean, it's Kathy Manis. I would love to know the answer that you would be looking for in those behavioral questions that you just posed.
Well, the answer that I'd be looking for is some sort of insight and ownership into what they contributed to a dynamic that didn't go very well, and then some sort of corrective behavior that they did or some sort of trigger that they realized. So I want to hear insight, and I want to hear corrective behavior. That's what I want to hear about.
So can you give me an
example? What did they do differently? Yeah. So, for example,
can I say something before you give the example? Dynamic, used as a noun, is not allowed on this show, okay? You should have read
that before you came on.
Go ahead.
I did, but there were so many words I couldn't keep them all straight, and I use most of those words on a regular basis. I like leverage as a noun, though, not as a verb. Leverage as a noun. And I think you allow that. But the example I have is, Kathy, and it's a really good question. I love that. Thank you for asking. And now I've forgotten it. No, you asked about, what would be the right example of a person answering a question? Right. So it's somebody who I see walking.
What are you looking for? I mean, I'd like a specific answer to the questions that you just asked.
Right. A specific real one that actually happened I'm not going to give you one that I want to hear every single time, but I'll tell you one that I heard that I liked. Is that what you want?
Yeah, that's great. That'd be great.
Right. So, there was this woman who I saw, I just didn't get along with. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was a woman thing, but I saw her, every time I saw her coming down the hall, I wanted to dive into a cubicle so she didn't see me before, it didn't see me coming. And I said, well, what was it? What was it about that person that drove that? And she said, well, I had to take a close look. She didn't dislike me. She would grab my attention and hold my attention with little, really trivial, insignificant data that would tie up my day and make me crazy. It would get me off track. I'm always a busy person. I got things lined up. It made me nuts. And so, you know, once I got to deal with that, I had to kind of frame up my responsibilities or my requirements of her. Hey, listen, Brenda, when I see you coming and we catch up to talk, I love hearing from you. I need to keep moving on. I need to kind of make this a kind of short and sweet thing. Let's do a schedule, a regular weekly time where we can kind of catch up in a more meaningful way. Do you know what I mean? So she saw, recognizing herself, that something that there was this behavior of this other person that was driving her crazy, and then she moved to a more effective way. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's, I mean, one that jumps out to me.
Yes, I love good behavioral questions, and I like that. Thank you.
Okay, he reminded me of one that I want to ask him. His whole shtick is, you know, you put your people into these 16 categories. I'm sorry, some of them are, you get used to, but I don't believe that every manager is going to memorize these types. But that's put that aside. Then what you do is look for their hot buttons so you can control them. You keep talking about leverage, and what you mean is, do you dangle a reward in front of them and say, I'm not going to give this to you unless you shape up or unless you do what I want? That's essentially it, isn't it?
Yep. Yes.
That works?
It works all the time. Because every person – now, listen, what your point is fair. I'm not a big believer in a 16 – there's only 16 types of people in this world. We'll all agree that there's more. What I wanted to do with this book was get people thinking about the different characters who are on their team. So not to think about all of my people are just one type of person, and they're all going to respond to a bonus strategy, or they're all going to respond to a paid time off strategy in the same way. What I want to get people to do is think about what are the specific drivers of each person on my team, and how am I going to pull the right strings to get that person to move in the way that is most productive for me. So this is – I'm a little bit of a cynic animal, so I don't mind that people think of this in a pretty selfish way. I think if they think of things like that, how is this going to be most useful for me? How is this person going to be most effective for me? If I pull the right strings on that person and therefore she is – it's going to make me better, and it's probably going to make her better, and everybody's going to be happy.
And do you adjust your communication style to match that of the person that you're speaking to?
100%. I use DISC assessment in my trainings a lot, and some people like it. They report their own. They take their own little tests, and they're like, wow, that's exactly me. You must be a palm reader. It's amazing. Unbelievable. Oh, my God. I use that just for credibility purposes. What I really use it for is to get them to think about the different types of people, who's not like them, and how do they like their information packaged? How do they like to be spoken to? How do they like to be incentivized? How do they like to be punished? Or how are they most effective when they're punished? That to me is a more
okay. Now I'm losing. I'm falling asleep. Sorry. Okay.
Wow, you're the only one. Now I have Kathy on board, which is great.
Yeah, I let you go on too long. Everybody says let them talk. That's not always a good remedy, okay? I want to know, give me some examples of when you've, in your book, you say, hey, I know you want a promotion, and you keep telling her that. How long can that go for?
It cannot go for very long, right? So you got to be credible. So if I'm drawing a line in the sand or I'm dangling something out there and they say, you know, here it is for you, you know, here's what I need from you in order to get this. You can't hold, you got to deliver on those. Otherwise, you will lose that person. I mean,
okay,
you can't
give
them false
some examples
promises
on a regular basis. What this leverage thing?
Well,
how
on your promotion thing is an interesting thing. So a lot of times, you know, there's just only so many times that promotions come up. Well, you know, so I need to, you know, as a manager, sometimes I need to think creatively. Is there a title upgrade that I can give this person? It's not a formal promotion, but it's within the context of our corporate policy, or I can get some sort of HR sign-off that actually makes the person recognize and, like, look, this is sort of a placeholder for when that position holds, it gets developed. I'll stop there because I don't want to go on too long.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good decision. Now, you said something. You know what? You said you don't like passive-aggressive people, and you said something about me 5 minutes ago that I can't remember now. But, man, that was a little shot, okay? You don't like that. You do it yourself.
I can be a little passive-aggressive. What do you want me to tell you? I can do it. I would take one to know one.
There's nothing wrong with it. I personally think it's a good thing, okay? But that brings me to a question. I would ask a manager, how do you resolve conflict on your team, even a project manager? That's very important. Get these people working together who don't like each other. But
there's
another question. Why do they have to work together? What is it they have to do together? I don't usually know, okay?
No, well, that's a great question. I spent a couple years in business school and having to work with people and have seen lots of work situations where everybody's working individually and it's just fine. I think it's very contextual, Animal, so I think it's going to depend on who it is, you know, what organization you work for, and that's you hate that answer, but that's the reality. So if I have a group that is really interdependent, and I need, in order to get from steps A to Z, I got to get everybody kind of working together. Well, yeah, I'm going to spend a whole hell of a lot of time understanding what the team dynamics are and how everybody works effectively together.
So how do people do that? I mean, what kind of answer should we be looking for if we ask someone a question like that? A real-life answer, right? A real-life answer. This is, in fact, not just one, but when you go into an interview, you better have
three
examples.
Three to five, right.
Maybe five,
yeah.
Okay?
Right.
You have
one. Then I'll go on.
Do you have one?
Yes, of course I have one.
Go ahead.
Especially like in a process scene, so at a manufacturing plant where I've got managers in production and shipping who are not working very effectively together. A lot of times the only reason they're not working well together is because they're not talking about the issues. So this group I worked with here in New York in a manufacturing plant, it's one of the few remaining here in New York, I just had to have them schedule a regular meeting time to talk about some of the handoff challenges that they were facing. And then, you know, for the first couple I actually policed just because there was so much tension and animosity built up because they weren't dealing with the problems head on. And they weren't, you know, they were kind of, everybody was bitching about their own separate divisions and not dealing with what's the collective problem and how are we going to get past it.
Okay. You know what? One thing, you don't believe in inspiring people very much. That's sort of a baloney that you get from these CEO books, that the job of a leader is to inspire. People aren't going to get inspired. You tell a story. I thought it was pretty good. You're on a treadmill in the gym, and you see a story about this kid who plays high school football or something like that, and he's got cancer, and everybody else decides to play the game for him, just like out of that famous movie. And you said, you know what? And you started crying in public. Everybody saw you. But you said, that's not going to work too many times. So that tells me that you can't really inspire people. You have to find some more mundane way to get them to do the job. And all that leadership baloney about vision, it's not really real, is it?
Right. I mean, it only takes you about a half hour on the show with me to realize that, yeah, I'm not going to inspire that many people. I haven't been able to keep that many listeners.
Yeah, but you're not trying to inspire them. That's your policy, right?
Right. No, absolutely. It's not so much the mundane. It's the day-to-day. What am I doing day-to-day? I mean, listen, I think there's some value in having a great speech or a great message and delivering that impactfully. Don't get me wrong. When people do that well, it really resonates with everybody, including me. There I was welling up on the treadmill when I was watching this. But at the end of the day, I know you hate that too. So at every day, at every time, you actually love to – what you need to do is roll up your sleeves and get things done. So yeah, it's more about production and delivering and not.
Okay,
just,
so what do you do then? Let's say you have a morning meeting. What are you supposed to be doing then?
Well,
here's another thing. You say you don't like it when you go to a client and everybody's happy. People aren't this. You know they're hiding.
It makes
something.
Me sick.
Yeah,
right.
But look, it makes you sick. You can see on this show, I've got a team, fairly regular people. They're not happy, but it's not going anywhere positive. The fact that they're – what's the – you always say address the elephant in the room. maybe there is. What am I doing wrong? Coach me. You're here. I'll get some free coaching.
Well, that's a fair point. I mean, I think there are positive work environments. Don't get me wrong. I think some people like where they are, and thoroughly, there are better work environments than others. So don't get me wrong. I do believe that. I always want to just check it out. So if everybody's, you know, got the perma smile planted on the on their faces, and they're, you know, everybody's telling them they love you, you know, they love each other, and then I hear something to the contrary whispered, you know, behind somebody's back of the water cooler, I'm going to get suspicious. You know, I'll take this to an extreme. There's a large hedge fund here in New York that I've done some work with, and they actually have a policy where it actually makes me kind of sick too, but they record every conversation that goes on in the entire place. So with the premise behind it is that there's no behind the back backstabbing bullshit. That everything is like right out in front of everybody, and there's no secrets. There's no, you know, so anything that you can tell somebody behind a closed door, you can tell anybody in the whole company because you're going to be effectively. And so, I mean, I think what I want to do is make sure that there's nothing going on behind the scene, underneath the scenes, where it's not emerged. If there's a lot of times tensions be underneath those perma smiles. That's my point.
Okay, and it's a very important thing for the manager or leader to own his own bodily waste. Is that right?
Yes, more important than anything. So that was what I was getting at with interview questions, with like that, you know, those that kind of vulnerability, kind of insight-driven things. What can they own with respect to their own contributions to things that don't go that great?
Okay, so when the manager accepts, says, "I did something wrong," how often is that going to work? If he does, you know, keeps saying every day, "This was my mistake." Like, where's that going to go? He's going to lose his job, right?
No, well, that's a fair point. I mean, eventually he will lose his job, and he'll lose some credibility. So the idea is not to make that many mistakes.
Yeah, but people make mistakes every day, don't they? Or do they?
They do make mistakes every day, and some are worth not even talking about because they're so minuscule. But when they rise to the level of certain mistakes, rather than pass the buck, which I think is a tendency, a cover-your-ass kind of play by managers, just – I don't think – not only makes me nuts, I don't think it's going to serve them very well in the long term, because they're going to have people on their team, they're going to rise up above them, and they're going to know what that person did. They're going to have peers that see what this happened, and they're, you know, at some point going to be in a position where they're going to have to need and rely on their support. So I think all of these reasons lead to, you know, some potential problems for
the –
Yeah,
what did I ask you? What else? What happened? What have I missed?
Oh.
What part of your message have I missed? The show's almost over.
Oh, it is? Oh,
yeah,
geez,
and
it went so
I
fast
felt it, you know,
me.
I was rolling during the first half hour, but for the last little while, I feel like, you know what, Jerry mentioned show traction. I'm not getting any show traction, at least for myself now. So let me throw it into your court.
Jerry, I think, has been riveted for the last 20 minutes or so. I think
maybe
it
picked up for him. He didn't like
I
it.
I think he jumped off the call.
No.
All right, yeah, he's still sleepy. All
and
right,
tell
well,
me, you lead us for the last few minutes. Come
inspire
on.
Us.
Yeah.
Oh, no, come on. I'm not going to inspire. Are you kidding me?
Tell us something interesting that we can use, that we can walk away, that the recruiters and the resume writers and career coaches who listen to this show say,
okay,
listen to that guy, Sean O'Neill. He rocks.
Yeah. Here's one of the things that I think would be – is often not really dealt with in an interview with an incoming manager, and I think it's really important, is to understand when they make what they do with difficult situations. Are they able and willing to make the tough call? And what is that? You know, I dealt with an executive of a company who was saddled with overhead that had so much capacity he didn't even know what to do with it. And so he was a coaching client of mine. And when I was visiting with him, he didn't present it like that, but as he started talking about it, and I said, "Wow, it's a lot of people given the amount of work you have that are here. Tell me about what each one of them does." And when he was rolling it out, I realized, boy, you know, and I said, it sounds like you have a lot of capacity. Are you going to be planning on growth? Are you planning, no, well, hopefully, but, you know, you never know. And are they irreplaceable? No, but this guy is sort of a friend of a friend or whatever. Unwilling and unable to make the tough call and cut ahead that would actually dramatically increase the efficiency and the productivity of his company. So I think, like, you know, that to me, if I'm an executive who's looking for an incoming manager, that person's inability to make a tough decision or make a tough call in a tough spot is going to really cost me as an executive of that company. I think that's critical. How's that?
I want you. This is my wish for you. That after you get off this show, you start thinking, what questions if I was going to advise the CEO of a company on how to hire managers, and what questions, or how would I tell him to conduct the interview? What would I tell her to say? I mean, there's all kinds. These leaders are always given their advice and their tips online. How would that translate into an interview? I've always wondered, what are the good questions for managers,
right,
but leaders?
I think you would
improve your presentation if you said, yeah, this is what happened. This is what I told the manager to ask the guy.
But how useful is that going to be without any context?
You just gave me a hard call. That's a clear question that applies in every managerial situation.
The one difference between you and me that's become very clear to me is, you're more interested in the specific words. What are the things I say? What's my script? What do I have to do to can apply with some regularity to everything? And for me, I'm much more interested in that. What's that total experience feel like when I'm sitting across from somebody and I have 20 minutes or a half hour? What does the total experience feel like between me and that person? And that is going to be dictated by what the context is, what that person brings into the situation, what I'm bringing into the situation, what my company culture is like and what that requires, and all those different things. So for you to ask to just list out a bunch of questions, makes me kind of sick. Like, I'm never going to use those questions.
What the heck?
Whoa.
What was that?
Crazy.
He's criticizing me, okay?
Wow.
That's an interesting question, Sean.
I think Ryan just left the call.
She thinks Sean, not Ryan. Ryan's his son.
Sean.
Hell no. I'm staying extra if I have
to. Does everybody in your family have Irish names? Do they all have Irish names?
They do, and I'm the most Italian-Irish person you'd ever want to meet. Yes, my mother's name is Esposito. I'm much more Italian than I am.
But isn't O'Neill a Scottish name?
It actually is a Scottish name. Very good.
Scotch-Irish. Okay. Now, the thing here, I guess this is the last thing. I work, when I interview somebody, I have to have good, specific questions. Gut feel is very important to me, but you can't always trust your gut feel, okay? And that's what you're saying. I fly by the seat of my pants like that football coach, okay?
No, because I'm going to come to that situation, that interviewing situation, with a list of questions that are based on my hypotheses, based on my research leading up and preparation leading up to that interview. So they're going to be very different for every person. And then in that interview room, there's going to be some different tangents I take or different directions I take based on what the responses are. So I want to avoid the script. The script makes me sick.
Animal loves scripts. He
does.
It's
his
roadmap.
Which has obviously served him well, obviously.
He's already said I'm the nerdy data type. I wish I was. But anyway, you cannot stay for the after show. I can't stay for the after show. And I don't care what these guys say. I don't know if this is passive aggressive, but I like meeting you. Thank you, Sean.
Thing.
Hey, who all is still here?
Hey, Jerry. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas. That's Alan, right?
Yo.
And is some girl here, Rayanne?
Yeah, I'm here.
The newlywed.
No.
Who's Broadbean?
Who's Broadbean?
You're engaged?
No, who used to be at Broadbean? Not Rayanne. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Rayanne's at Broadbean, but I didn't get married.
Oh, Maren Hogan.
Maren was never at Broadbean.
No.
Sure.
Somebody?
What?
Oh, well. Never mind.
I got engaged a year ago, and I was supposed to be married this summer, but it didn't happen.
Oh! Sorry.
That's okay.
Called it off?
It's not called off. It's been postponed.
Oh, okay. Hey, don't be edgy.
This is not edgy. You want me to get edgy?
No, I just said don't.
I think somebody on the phone, though, got newly engaged. Somebody else on this
line.
Just got engaged.
Anybody?
If she's still on the line.
No, that was her elevator music, and then she got cut
Kathy.
Off.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Hello.
Kathy just got engaged.
I did.
That's great.
I did.
Rumor has it she kind of had to drag her man down to the jewelry shop and say, get this now.
No.
That's kind of how I read it on Facebook.
No, I was in Atlanta and doing all
the... What the heck?
Now
I'm... Hey, Jerry.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Are you scoring this?
Yep.
I got to go.
Oh, wait.
Animal was really... Animal was great. I give him an 85. The guest, I'll give him a 60. I mean, nice guy, good personality, but too involved with the setting of the table and not the results of the cooking of the food.
Mm-hmm. All right, man.
Everybody,
thanks, Alan.
Have a good Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Okay, Kathy, back to your engagement.
Now he was looking at loose stones, and so he wanted me to pick out the stone I wanted and the setting. He was smart.
See, maybe I'm just so old-fashioned that I always thought that, I don't know. Yes, I'm old-fashioned, I guess.
You are.
Now you just pick out your stone on eBay or wherever, and you send the link to your man and say, hey, if you're going to propose tonight like you should, here's the ring you ought to get me.
No, it totally, I was not expecting a proposal at all.
How could you not expect a proposal if you're wedding ring shopping? See, that's what I can't put together. And that must be the whole left coast thing.
No, I was not wedding ring shopping. After he proposed, we went out looking for rings.
Oh, so he didn't have the ring when he proposed?
No.
Hmm.
He wanted her to have the ring she wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
And
no.
Kathy probably has to have a specially made ring, too, because she is teeny tiny.
No, my hands are big. They're like working women's hands. I
mean, man hands?
Yeah, they are. They're like,
surprisingly
large
hands.
There's a Seinfeld episode for that.
Yeah.
Huh.
No, thanks, Rayanne. I'm thrilled.
Well,
congratulations,
Kathy, regardless of how much wrangling was involved.
None. I swear to God, I thought
I just slipped that shit in to be controversial.
What else is new?
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, what's new?
You're always controversial.
No, I'm not.
Hmm.
Oh, well. Ray, your scores, please.
You know, I did not like this show at all. And maybe it's because I jumped on late. I think I was only like 10 or 15 minutes late, though. But I never did catch or grasp what was going on in
the
show?
It's a world of ambiguous management consulting.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, and
his message was ambiguous as well. So,
they have to be. That's why they can't cover it all in just one meeting. It's going to be a series of, you know, workshops for, you know, $3,500 a day workshop stuff.
Okay.
You know. Yeah, that's cool though.
I'm going to go ahead and give a score of 65 for each of them, and that I think is very generous, but
mm-hmm.
I'm in a giving mood because it is, after all, the giving season. So.
Yeah. Excellent. Kathy?
Mine are the same as Rayanne.
Hmm. I'll give the guy a 60 because I don't know. See, for me, I need to hear something specific, you know, rather than just generalizations. But I thought Animal was well prepared. I'll give him a 78.
Well, that's his job, you
should be well
prepared,
from being
right?
The recruiting animal to just being the talk show animal with anybody and everybody. Maybe he's just too well known in the recruiting world. And nobody wants to come on the show.
I think he needs to ask people to come on the show. I don't think you should wait for people to. I think there are many people that he could address that would either come back as guests or are new faces in the space.
How about Craig Fishdogs? He'd be a good guest. Just see what he's been up to.
I'm not sure that Craig is doing a lot of recruiting anymore, but he would be a good guest. He's been on before.
I thought he was a recruiting trainer.
That's true, but it's not actually doing. I don't know. He would be a good guest.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. I mean,
Isn't that the guy you called Beefcakes or Mr. Beefcakes or
yeah.
Cupcake, something like that?
Oh, yeah. So big holiday plans, anybody, everybody?
Is there nobody else on the call?
No, it's just us three.
Wow.
Me and two allegedly engaged women. Kathy, do you have a date for your wedding?
Did she leave the call?
Kathy!
I think she left. No, last I saw there was no date selected for them yet.
So, I mean, if it's sometime next summer,
I'm sorry,
ladies. I'm going to still have to go old-fashioned with you. Two non-engaged women with rings. I mean, you're halfway there. You're halfway
I'm
there.
I'm engaged.
I mean,
I had a whole wedding planned and had to postpone it. So, I mean, it's still going to happen. It sucks.
Bummer. Man.
Yep.
Just spent $300.
Squared away soon, though.
Spent $360 on my dog at the vet yesterday.
Oh, how many stitches?
No stitches. Nothing you can do. Just a topical antibiotic and a shot.
Oh. Did you kill the other dog?
What's that?
Did you kill the other dog?
No, it's his. Actually, it's my dog's dad.
Oh, what?
He's a nasty old dog. Yeah.
Had they not ever met?
Well, they'd met.
Okay.
And almost got in a fight every time. My dog
is
a happy-go-lucky dog. He's happy to be out hunting. His dog is just crusty.
That's not good.
So, yeah, we were standing around by the truck after hunting a particular area, and all of a sudden it was just a pile of dog fur and teeth. So, yeah, I got him x-rays just to make sure that there wasn't anything internal. It was crazy. So I need to make another placement. Quick.
Yeah. Hey, anybody out there listening, please go check out Jerry's blog today, guest blog, or actually
blog.
Regular contributing blog on jobsite.com/blog. He actually delivers a really brilliant message, which is, hey, third-party recruiters, block out all the noise.
Is it
it's
a hard-hitting
attempt knock out the noise of social recruiting and all the other quick fixes that are out there about recruiting.
Yep.
Jerry's a firm believer that you have to pick up the phone in order to be able to send an invoice.
I would like to modify that just a little bit, though.
Okay.
It's not all about the telephone anymore.
No, it's not.
It is, though, about the presentation. It's about
absolutely
whether you're texting somebody or you're, sending them a Facebook message, or it's about making people think about what you're doing rather than just ambiguous. Yeah, here's a link.
You have to be involved. You have to be engaged in order for the reciprocal of that to occur.
I don't know about reciprocal.
You don't know that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just been a crazy week for me. The last 5 or 6, 7 days has been crazy.
Yeah, I think it's been crazy for a lot of people.
It is a long drive out to South Dakota.
That's a long drive, and then you were gone during a very tragic event here in the U.S.
We were out in the boonies, and a friend of mine called and he said, Did you hear what just happened? I said, no. He said, yeah, turn on any radio channel that you've got. And so we just sat there at the truck going, oh my God.
Yeah, it was horrible.
But,
leaving it
on a happy note, it's Christmas time.
It is Christmas time. So I hope those who celebrated Hanukkah last week enjoyed that. And as we go into Christmas, everybody that celebrates and loves Christmas time like I do, hopefully they will be able to keep the Christmas spirit and not let the horrific events of last week put too big of a damper on.
And might I add, go get yourself a legally licensed weapon to defend yourself.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Merry Christmas.
All right.
Thanks
Merry
for calling
Christmas.
In, Ryan. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bill was okay, Animal was okay, but the show itself,
Same old thing.
As a recruiter, there's nothing I'm going to now take to my desk, and I am in a state of constant listening, learning, and applying. That's my thing.
I got nothing from this show. I'm not going to do anything new. That's what I'm looking for in my learning phase of my career. Are you familiar with the after show and its format and the goal of said show, Cliff?
No.
What we do is on a scale of 1 to 10, you need to rate the guest and then the host.
Oh, okay.
And you can pick a score for any reason you want. Some people might disagree with you, challenge your score, but in general, whatever you want to score. Whole numbers only, please.
Okay.
I'm here, Jerry.
Andy, what did you think of the show today? I missed it. I was involved in trench warfare.
Man, I got to tell you, I'm...
Hey, Animal, mute the person that's doing the beeping.
Okay, area code 203. I'm off now. I'm going to have some lunch.
What are you going to have?
Don't you worry about that. Just handle your show.
Hey, I'm not worried about it. I was seeing if you were interesting. Andy Gregory, I'm sorry to have...
Yeah, no, no problem. No, I understand. We have to take care of housekeeping. I'm sure the guy's a nice guy. As a guest, I'm just gonna say it was kind of on the plainer side of vanilla, pretty much. I mean, it really was. I mean, I just I don't remember a show being more, wah wah. I mean, it's just kind of I'm indifferent.